Welcome to the Model Railroader, your ultimate destination for all things railroading. From trains.com, we bring you step-by-step modeling and construction projects, insightful reviews, tips from the experts, and more. This program is proudly presented by Aftersight, a community hub for audio news, entertainment, and resources. Find us at aftersight.org. This program is intended to be used solely by individuals who are blind or have low vision. All aboard!
Thank you for joining us for Model Railroader Magazine, read by Jason Consul. Today, we will be reading the following articles: News and Reviews, Ask Model Railroader, and On Operation. The first article is a continuation of News and Reviews conducted by Cody Grivno and Bryson Sleppy. Atlas N-Scale Norfolk Southern SD60E. The Norfolk Southern SD60E diesel locomotive is making its debut in the Atlas Model Railroad Company N-Scale production lineup. Features on the master line model include a scale speed motor, operating front and rear ditch lights, and body-mounted AccuMate couplers. Norfolk Southern rebuilt 136 electromotive division SD60 diesels of various lineages at its Juniata locomotive shop in Altoona, Pennsylvania between 2010 and 2017. The units are numbered 6900 through 7002 and 7004 through 7035. The engine scheduled to be the 7003 was numbered 911 in honor of first responders. The sample we received is decorated as Norfolk Southern 6927. The prototype was built by EMD in September 1986 as Chicago and Northwestern SD60-8042. The unit was renumbered Union Pacific 5994 in June 1997. It was returned by UP to the lessor in January 2002 and later wound up in the Helm Financial Fleet, becoming HLCX 5994. Norfolk Southern acquired the 5994 in 2011, renumbering the six-axle road unit 6527. The locomotive was rebuilt as SD60E 6927 in November 2013. The diesel is still in service. The SD60E is constructed similar to other N-scale diesels produced by Atlas. It has a one-piece plastic body with a separate cab and sill/walkway. The front pilot has a factory-applied snowplow. Other pilot details are molded. The crescent cab is a separate part with wire grab irons, freestanding sand filler hatches, and a PTC antenna array on top. The headlight and side cab windows are picked in aluminum. The engineer's side of the cab features an access door for the electronic air brake equipment. The louvered panel adjacent to it is the air intake for the air conditioner. The brakeman's side access door for the air conditioner is louvered. Many of the long hood details are molded, including the rooftop fans, hinged-style roof access doors, and fan grab iron. The inertial air filter screens for the split cooling system and Nathan K5 LAR24 horn are factory applied. The Atlas model is neatly painted black with opaque white lettering. Graphic placement largely matches prototype images. One minor error was the SD60E designation on the brakeman's side of the cab. It should be moved near the back edge of the cab. The guard by the traction motor blower duct has a slightly different design than that of the full-size unit. The fuel tank on the model has a round profile, but should have an angled taper about halfway down the side. Spare knuckle holders were omitted from the rear pilot. Our test sample has an ESU LockSound V5 sound decoder. For workbench testing, I used an NCE power cab. At step 1, the model ran at 1 scale mile per hour. At step 28, the SD60E was barreling down the test track at 117 scale miles per hour. The speed range can be fine-tuned using configuration variables. Atlas has done a good job recreating the SD60E in N-scale. The six-axle unit would look good on the point of a mainline freight, but it could just as easily be running long hood forward in local service. If you're a fan of modern diesel power, you'll definitely want to check out this master line model. Signed, Cody Grifno, Senior Editor. Facts and features. Price: direct current model with factory installed speakers, $149.95. With dual mode ESU sound decoder, $259.95. Manufacturer: Atlas Model Railroad Company, located at 378 Florence Avenue, Hillside, New Jersey, 07205. Reachable at shop.atlasrr.com. Era, 2010 to present. Road names: Norfolk Southern, parentheses, thoroughbred scheme in two road numbers, GO Rail, honoring our veterans, and honoring first responders in one number each, close parentheses. Also available undecorated. Features: body-mounted AccuMate couplers, front at correct height, rear 15 thousandths of an inch too high. Metal wheel studs mounted on plastic drive axle gears, engage. Weight 3.5 ounces. Walther's HO Greenville Wood Chip Hopper. The Greenville 73-foot wood chip hopper has returned to the William K. Walther's Incorporated HO scale freight car production range. The model, part of the mainline series, is based on a 1970s prototype designed for transporting wood chips between sawmills and paper mills. Greenville Steel Car Company, located in its namesake town in Pennsylvania, produced the 7,000 cubic foot capacity wood chip hopper from the early 1970s to the early 1980s. Among the railroads to roster the six-bay hopper were Apalachicola Northern, Georgia Railroad, Missouri Pacific, and Kansas City Southern. The sample we received is decorated in the Family Lines system paint scheme as Louisville and Nashville number 31900, part of the 31900 through 31999 series. The 100 full-size cars were built by Ortner Freight Car Company in 1981 under job number OC-331. The L&N cars were part of a joint order with the Seaboard Coastline, which purchased 200 cars, parentheses, SCL 196275 through 196474, close parentheses. In elevation drawings supplied by the Louisville and Nashville Historical Society, it notes Greenville die-pressed side sheets and corner caps were used on the L&N and SCL cars. When L&N and Seaboard Coastline merged to form the Seaboard System in 1982, the L&N cars were renumbered SBD 434100 through 434199. The cars kept the same numbers on CSX. We last reviewed the Walther's Greenville wood chip hopper in the August 2003 issue. Back then, the model had plastic wheel sets mounted on brass axles, modeler-installed wire grab irons for the end sills, and Bachmann Easy-Mate plastic couplers. Today, the hopper has metal wheel sets mounted on plastic axles and Protomax metal couplers. There are drill starter points on the end sills, but grab irons aren't included. The model has an injection-molded plastic body with raised panels on the sides and crisp rivet detail. The panel detail is not embossed on the car's interior, nor is there interior rivet detail. Inside, the car has crisply defined cross ridge and longitudinal hood floor sheet detail. Additional interior items include cross ties, gussets, and a partition. These are used on the full-size cars to stabilize the high sides. Most of the hopper's weight comes from a metal casting that includes the body bolsters, center sill, and draft gear boxes. The casting also has triangle-shaped pieces that fill the valleys between the hoppers. Plastic was used for the hopper doors, latches, and screw-mounted draft gear box covers. Our sample features smooth and evenly applied black paint, though the interior should be light gray. The yellow lettering is opaque throughout, which isn't always easy to accomplish over a dark base color. The lettering placement closely follows prototype photos of cars from the series. However, the SCL and L&N heralds, as well as the lettering, are a bit oversized. Drawings of the Greenville's 7,000 cubic foot capacity wood chip hopper were published in the April 1999 issue of Railroad Model Craftsman magazine. The exterior dimensions match published data. The interior length and width are both a scale 5 inches too narrow, which is typical on open hopper and gondola models due to limitations in the injection molding process. Because of its height and distinct die-pressed side panels, the Greenville 7,000 cubic foot capacity wood chip hopper was a signature car of its era. After a lengthy hiatus, it's good to see the model back in the Walther's product lineup. Signed, Cody Grifno, Senior Editor. Facts and features. Price, $39.98, parentheses, undecorated, $34.98, close parentheses. Manufacturer, William K. Walther's Incorporated, located at 5601 West Florist Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53218, reachable at walthers.com. Era, early 1970s to present. Road names, Louisville and Nashville, parentheses, Family Lines System, close parentheses, Apalachicola Northern, Atlanta and St. Andrews Bay, CSX, Norfolk Southern, Seabird Systems, and Southern Railway, parentheses, black and brown schemes, close parentheses. 4 to 6 road numbers per scheme, also available undecorated. Features. 36-inch turned metal wheels on plastic axles, correctly gauged. Minimum radius, 18 inches. Recommended radius, 22 inches or larger. Protomax metal couplers at correct height. Weight, 6.2 ounces. 0.4 ounces too heavy per National Model Railroad Association recommended practice 20.1. The next section is Ask Model Railroader by Cody Grifno. Identifying buffer cars. Question. Although I'm an N-scale modeler, I read the review of the Milwaukee, Racine, and Troy HO scale buffer car on trains.com. Reading the description brought up a question. Do railroads designate cars to dedicated buffer service? If so, how are these cars identified as used in buffer service only? Signed, Perry A. Polino. Answer. Thanks for reading the review, Perry. Before answering your question, let's first talk briefly about what buffer cars are. They are freight cars placed between the locomotive and cars carrying hazardous cargo to protect the train crew in the event of a derailment. The buffer car not only puts extra space between the crew and the rest of the train, but it also keeps flammable materials away from a potential ignition source. Some unit crude oil and ethanol trains also have a second buffer car at the end. A variety of car types can be used in buffer service, including boxcars, covered hoppers, gondolas, open hoppers, and tank cars. The one exception is flat cars. Buffer cars are loaded with non-hazardous material that won't shift in transit, parentheses, sand and rocks are a couple of examples, close parentheses. With that practical information covered, let's get to your questions. Yes, railroads designate cars for buffer service. I spotted Southern Railway Pullman Standard 4,750 cubic foot capacity, 3-bay covered hopper number 88713 with buffer applied below the road number in a red stencil font. BNSF Railway has a large fleet of buffer cars. In 2011, it started reassigning several of its General American 4,180 cubic foot capacity air slide covered hoppers to buffer service. The former Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe and Burlington Northern cars were renumbered into the 808,000 through 808299 series, such as the cars shown above. As the need for buffer cars grew, BNSF introduced the 808300 through 808731 and 808900 through 808966 series. In addition to air slide covered hoppers, the railroad began using covered hoppers traditionally associated with grain surface as buffers, including 4,700 and 4,750 cubic foot capacity 3-bay cars built by FMC and Pullman Standard, respectively. Along with renumbering the cars, BNSF applied buffer service, parentheses, or SVC, close parentheses, only do not load stencils to the car sides. I've seen some cars further lettered hatch covers and outlet gates welded shut. BNSF buffer cars have been offered commercially by several manufacturers, including Athearn Trains, Atlas Model Railroad Company, Fox Valley Models, Scale Trains, Tangent Scale Models, and Micro Trains Line Company. Buffer service decals are available from CMR products in multiple scales. Circus City Decals offers decals for HO scale cars. Question. I'll soon begin work on a 1.5 by 6 foot N scale switching layout, parentheses, with a 1 or 2 foot staging track, close parentheses, that's set in southeastern Washington. The model railroad will be based on the Burlington Northern and feature a grain elevator and team track. I would like to know if you have any suggestions for benchwork, structures, and operations. Signed, Damien Boucher. Answer. The first thing that came to mind regarding benchwork was the staging yard Trains.com director David Popp constructed for our HO scale Wisconsin and Southern project layout, featured in the January 2008 Model Railroader. He built a 1 by 16 foot staging yard using 1 by 3s and traditional box frame construction. You can easily adapt his methods to your layout's footprint. Since you're modeling the BN, that means your layout will be set between 1970 and 1995. As a fellow BN modeler, here are a few resources that will help you in the planning process. Start by getting a Burlington Northern annual from the era you plan on modeling. The books, first written by F. Hole Wagner and later Robert C. Del Grosso, provide a snapshot of the railroad at a specific time. Many annuals also listed diesel assignments, which will give you a better idea of the units that were used in southeastern Washington. Once you determine the era and location you want to model, try to find a BN Shippers Perpetual Industrial Numbering System book for that section of the railroad. These railroad-published books list the various industries in each town and have a basic, but not to scale, track schematic for each town. Don't forget to check out the Friends of the Burlington Northern, parentheses, FOBNR.org, close parentheses, as well. The organization's website has lots of valuable information. Question. I'm building a retaining wall using Woodland Scenic's cut stone castings and want to attach them to extruded foam insulation board. What is the best glue to use? Signed, Alan Cox. Answer. The Woodland Scenic's cut stone retaining walls are hydrocal castings, so you're going to want an adhesive that will work with dissimilar materials. However, since you're going to attach them to extruded foam insulating board, you'll need an adhesive that's foam safe. I'd recommend Loctite PL300, a latex water-based adhesive designed for attaching foam board to other materials. If you can't find PL300, try DAP Alex Plus, parentheses, an acrylic latex caulk, close parentheses, and DAP Dynaflex 230, parentheses, an acrylic latex sealant, close parentheses. Avoid solvent-based caulks and sealants. Though they're okay to use on the hydrocal, they may cause the foam to dissolve. If you plan on weathering the cut stone retaining walls with Woodland Scenic's earth colors, liquid pigments, or other stains, do that first. The adhesives may seal the hydrocal, preventing it from taking pigments and stains. Question. I recently ordered one of the Milwaukee, Racine, and Troy N-scale bay window cabooses from shop.trains.com. What does the, quote, P on top of the bay window stand for? Signed, R. Anderson. Answer. The P indicates it's a pool caboose, one not assigned to an individual conductor or specific crew. Former senior editor Jim Hediger explained how pool cars work in his article, Modeling Realistic Caboose Operations, in the July 2007 Model Railroader. Quote, efforts to improve train speeds and reduce operating costs in the mid-1950s led to changes in union agreements to allow some caboose to be used in pools. Within a decade, system-wide pool agreements required new or upgraded standardized cabooses that had full electrical and water systems, oil heat, polycarbonate correction polycarbonate window glazing, radios, refrigerators, retention toilets, high-backed seats, and roller bearings. Pool cabooses operated across companies and division lines, so crew changes were reduced to the time it took one crew to step off and to the next one to climb aboard. A company van or taxicab took the off-duty crew to a motel where they'd get better rest and have access to a restaurant for meals. With pool cars, the caboose tracks were moved to handy, but more secure, locations within the main yard. This also reduced theft and vandalism. End quote. Burlington Northern and Union Pacific are a couple of prototype railroads that used the letter P to indicate pool cabooses. Rock Island spelled out pool on its cabooses, usually applying it below the road number. When BN cabooses were moved from pool to local service, the P stencils on the car body and cupola were painted over, often in a slightly different shade of green. Replicating this on a model can give your layout a sense of history. Question: what is recommended for attaching buildings and other structures to the substructure of a model railroad? Signed, Byron Christmas. Answer: there's no one-size-fits-all way to attach a building to a model railroad. The key thing is to mask the joint where the structure meets the layout surface so you don't have what is referred to as, quote, floating building, one with a noticeable gap below the foundation. One of the most common ways to attach buildings to a model railroad is with full-strength white glue. If there are any gaps between the foundation and layout surface, mask them with ground foam, static grass tufts, 55-gallon drums, pallets, and figures as shown in the image above. Though white glue isn't necessarily known for its strength when compared to other adhesives, it's water-soluble, and that's what's important. If you have to tear down your model railroad because of a relocation or you decided to change a scene, you can wet the area with water or isopropyl alcohol to reactivate the glue. This will allow you to remove the building with little or no damage. If you're looking for a glue-free option, consider setting building foundations into shallow trenches. Obviously, this technique won't work in every situation. We did this with a few buildings on our HO scale Milwaukee Road Beer line, featured in the January 2009 model railroader. When we moved the sectional layout from the Kalmbach Media offices to our new headquarters in Brookfield, Wisconsin, we were able to lift the buildings out and wrap them for transport. Once we were settled at our new home, we unpacked the buildings and set them into place. Additional ideas can be found in Greg Condon's article, Foundations for Structures, in the July 2021 Model Railroader. The next article is On Operation by Jerry Jedzik. Supersized Operating Sessions. Cohen, Tennessee lies in southern Tennessee, almost 60 miles northwest of Chattanooga on CSX's former Nashville, Chattanooga, and St. Louis, Maine. Manned helpers are still stationed there for trains needing assistance to climb Cumberland Mountain through historic Cohen Tunnel. The former NC and STL Depot houses the Cohen Railroad Museum and a live screen rail camera. Cohen was also where NC and STL's Tracy City branch joined the Maine. Coal in the Sewanee area lured investors to build the line in 1856. It bridged the NC and STL Maine at the north portal of the tunnel and served Sewanee, Tracy City, Coalmont, and Palmer. Declining coal production saw the branch cut back to Coalmont in 1973 and its complete abandonment in 1985. It lives on, however, thanks to the 7.5-inch gauge, 1/8-scale Eagle Point Railroad, and the Chattanooga Society of Model Engineers, or CSME. The Eagle Point, begun in 2000, winds more than 11,000 feet of track through 38 acres of private property near Dunlap, Tennessee. Its owners have a long-term working relationship with the CSME, which assists in building and maintaining the railroad. Society members, almost 100, enjoy regular monthly operating sessions and special events. The railroad is not open to the public, but churches, scouts, and other organizations can arrange group visits. In 2006, the EP began building its own Tracy City branch. The branch mimics the prototype NC and STL track alignment and some of its grades, especially the hard pull from the junction to Sewanee. Most of its stations use actual NC and STL place names. Property lines make compromises inevitable, just as stairs and utility rooms force on layout designs. Nevertheless, Jeff Benton, regular EP dispatcher who inspired this column and assisted me with it, said, quote, "It almost looks like someone had fitted an NC and STL track map to our mountainside," end quote. Thank you for joining us for Model Railroader, read by Jason Consul.
You've been listening to the Model Railroader, brought to you by Trains.com. That's TRANES.com, in collaboration with AfterSight. If you've enjoyed this episode, we invite you to visit our website at AfterSight.org for more audio editions and original podcasts. For additional inquiries or to contact us, call us at 303-786-7777 or email contact@AfterSight.org. Thank you for listening.